Welcome to the Perfectly Saints Show, episode 707. I am Chris, as always, joined by Tony.
Remember, the important thing is not our top tens. No, the most important thing is what games Elon Musk is best at.
Shit, that also happened this past week, didn't it?
Dude, I've been on this story for since way before anybody else.
Jeff's a freaking story.
Well, all right. Earl is here. We'll get to it, Jeff. Earl is here.
And let me just say that I think this Joe Biden guy would make a great president. He gave a really good speech about stuff he would do as president. And I'm like, he should run.
Give him 4 years. In 4 years, he'll be back.
Great. Can't wait. Jeff is here as well.
Hello.
And we're going to do our top tens, but yeah, I guess there's a couple things we should touch on before we jump into that. Nintendo revealed the Switch 2. That is what it is called. I think, Earl, you just described it as the same thing as before, but rounder.
Yes.
Seems accurate.
Here's the thing. It is very much like Nintendo has a PTSD from the Wii to the Wii U, because this is 2 minutes of, this is the Switch, here's the Switch 2. The screen's bigger, the Joy-Con's bigger, they changed some stuff, now the colors are inside. But it's very, and then it's like, it's a giant, like, it's not even like a, no, it's a giant 2. I think the 2 is bigger than the actual logo. When they put it, I think, no, this is the Switch 2, the successor, the sequel. You want this, you need this. But then it's like, yeah, okay, it's a console, good for you.
Yeah, the 2 is as big as the like icon Joy-Cons,
yeah,
and it is bigger than the actual writing. That was all they showed, though. They showed a nice view of like a, you know, sizzle reel of the hardware, but we don't know what that hardware is. We just know it kind of looks like the Switch 2, rounder edges. Yeah,
but yes, and honestly speaking, I will give them credit for this. I mean, I always give them credit. If this is what you're going to do, it's just a hardware, this is how you do it. I don't need half an hour of Mark Cerny talking about the guts and then the interior of the console. And, you know, it's not them doing like, okay, here's a breakdown, here's the specs. And to be fair, I think they stopped doing that a while ago because they realized they can't compete in that regard. So why try to razzle-dazzle people with that? It's 2 minutes. It's a console out there. I mean, I think we've joked about it. It's been leaked. Like, most of the rumors that have popped up in the past month or so, very accurate. It looks like the Switch. It has a giant 2. The Joy-Cons are slightly bigger. It may function as a mouse. Somehow, people are excited for that. I'm still not processing how that works.
It looks really weird. Like, if it's going to work as a mouse, really weird.
Yes, and I don't understand the purpose. Yeah, this. I mean, really, the big news here is the event April 2nd, so my thunder. I'm here celebrating my 40th birthday. Nintendo's like, we're gonna do the same thing. And
he's giving you a present, Earl. That's all.
The present would be the release date of the console on that day, not like, oh, everybody's gonna be paying attention to this.
We'll pay attention to you, Earl.
And then I think that weekend, it's a very weird thing. Not a weird thing, they've done it before, but they usually have like these big console tours when they released and their new device. I've been, I live in New York City. I've been lucky enough to have been around for a lot of them. I went to the Cube Cup back in 2001. I went to the Wii U one in 2012. I went to the Switch one in 2017. Hopefully that New York will be one. But there's only like three cities in New York. I think it's New York, LA, and Dallas. And I think Toronto.
And Toronto, yeah.
And Toronto's the other one in North America. And then there's like five or six in Europe. And I think it's Japan and Seoul. And I think Melbourne. So it's a very limited event this time around. I don't know the reason for that. I don't know if the economics around it have changed, but it is, you know, like you would think you want more people to get hands on. I'm sure there'll be at events in between. But yeah, it's one of those things where it's like, it's just nice to kind of have it, the Switch 2 announced, so we don't have to worry about people being like, this is what the Switch 2 is going to be. But the way people are reacting both on both ends of the spectrum, like, I, you know, I'm part of Reset Era or Reset or whatever they want to call themselves. And I'm pretty sure there's like a new Switch 2 thread like every 10 minutes. What does this mean? What do you want to see? How does it function as a mouse? We'll get to it in a second. Mario Kart, 12 phase, 15 phase, 24 phase? Is it open world? Is it like Diddy Kong Racing? Again, they showed maybe 7 seconds of Mario Kart, and somehow we've had a lot of discourse around it already.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess that's mostly because we didn't get anything else. Like, and we weren't going to get anything else. It was a hardware reveal. They said they were doing the games later, but yeah, it's like the only thing really worth talking about because it looks like a Switch. So
yeah, which is again not a bad thing. It's a great form factor. People know what that is, but yeah, it's like we were saying pre-show. I watched a lot of reactions, or starting to watch a lot of reactions, and then seeing like it was like, okay, 10 minutes, fine, 15 minutes, half an hour. Kind of funny, I think did a full hour on it, and I'm just.
Ooh. I mean, but it is their job, right? I mean, it's kind of like if they don't cover this, nobody's gonna watch your channel. Like it's one of those things that they almost have to do it.
I get that you have to do some of it, but a whole hour.
It's like, what are we speculating on? Because it's really we don't have anything.
Yeah.
Like we don't know what the hardware is inside the thing.
Yeah.
Like a lot of it reminds me of, and you know, I hate to use 24/7 news channels, where it's like we have to talk. Does it mean we have something to say?
I think this, at least the speculation with Mario Kart, like. Some of that's fun, like, hey, like, what could they do with Mario Kart that's not,
yeah,
you know, what it has been? Because the best Mario Kart is the last one that came out and has everything in it. So, like, how do you improve on that?
And the worst part about 8 is that it is 11 years old?
Yeah, it's a Wii U game, yeah.
Yeah, it came out in 2014. So, like, to a lot of, like, there are, not, I mean, I think GTA 5 is probably the only other game I could think of. Whereas it's cross-generational, and I don't mean like it came on the Wii U and the Switch. I mean that somebody who was, like, 8, 9, 10 when that came out are in high school. Their younger brothers and sisters or people in elementary school are also growing up with that as their Mario Kart. Or, like, for us, the original Mario Kart came out in, what, 92? Then 5 years later, 64 came out. And then after 64, it was a much more rapid pace because I think the Super Circuit came out in like 99 or something like that. Mm-hmm. Double Dash is 2002. Then you get, you know, you get DS, you get Wii, you get 7, all within the span of, because like, yeah, you get what, 12 years between Double Dash and 8, so you get DS, you get Wii, and you get 7. So you get 3 games in that 12-year time period, and now we're getting one new game after 11 years.
Yeah. So, I think the speculation on that is fun. Like, hey, like, what can we do? But, like, the hardware talk is really strange. Like, we don't know what it's... like, we have no idea. We don't know if they've added any new weird stuff into it, which I guess is why all that speculation on it being like a mouse type thing is because they showed it kind of sliding.
Yes, and I think I mean we've been around enough for enough Nintendo trolls to know. Like, yes, they are not going to reveal their hands if they don't want to right now. And Kiri, they were teasing that because it's never, you know, it's never pointed out like, oh, this is a mouse functionality or something. But like, yes, it is guiding on its side with the tail, and it does have like the dyad sensors on it. So, you know, 1 + 1 = potatoes. So you're hoping that's what it is. But yeah, it's one of those things where I get it, but I'm also like, it's what, 8 weeks away, if that? It's about 2.5 months. It's not. And then the other speculation, again, this is very similar to the Switch original timetable, if the math maths out, because the Switch was revealed in October. They had the big breakout event in January, reached in March, early March. So everybody's kind of speculating, which I do kind of agree with, that we're looking at either late May or early summer release date for this. A bit later than I anticipated. I wanted to kind of, you know, like March, April. But
we shall. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Like, 2 months away, though. Like, 2.5 months. So, we got plenty of time. We will come back to the Switch 2 at some point.
The one positive I heard people speculating then we is that it's like, now that our third party...
No, done, Earl! We're done! No more Switch 2.
Well, I was going to say that our third party actually talk about their games now. Coming or not coming, so...
Yeah. Yeah, that, well, in the not, like, unannounced Nintendo console.
Yeah.
Like, all right. Well, we know it's the Switch 2 now, so
it's a miracle.
The other, it's a weird piece of news. Jeff mentioned it. Elon Musk was kind of outed as lying about being one of the best Path of Exile 2 players in the world.
Yeah. Also, his account says he is, but apparently he's been paying people to play on his account.
There's absolutely no way that he has played that game. Like, so, I way before any of the, like, this story, like, I'm talking, like, him out, right? I'm getting lots of Path of Exile content on YouTube because I was, like, looking up reviews of it, right? And I watched this fucking idiot, Asmongold, do a video where he's like showing some stream that Elon Musk did, and I was like, the game had been out like less than a week, like a couple days, and Elon Musk had a level 91 character, and I'm like, and fucking Asmongold's like, oh wow, he must be a real gamer, and like, oh, he's actually pretty good at this. And I was like, one, he got melted by a fucking boss in like 2 seconds. Two, are you fucking stupid, dude? There's, like, literally no way. Like, I don't know how he did. I guess he was paying... he must have been paying, like, multiple people to play it in China. Because, like, I have no idea. Like, dude, I've been playing this game a lot. It's been out for a month and...
A month and a half.
Yeah. My highest level character is, like, level 47. I've been playing it for fucking... a month and a half, dude. My highest level character is level 47.
You're not running like 6 companies.
That's the other thing too. All the idiots when he first was like showing off his character, all these idiots are like, "Well, dude, you realize he flies on planes a lot, so he's just like he's fucking playing it while he's on the plane." I'm like, I don't care if he was on a plane 24 hours a day since the game came out. There's no way that you're a fucking level 91 character. And that was the other thing that pissed me off about it too. I'm like, doesn't this guy have shit to fucking do? Like, I got
sick of doing it.
I was on vacation playing the fucking game. Like, so I had like literally nothing to do. I had nothing but time on my hands and I was just playing the game. I'm like, there's no way. It's impossible he has a level 91 character. So I guess there's like people have proven that it's total bullshit.
He did a stream last week. And that got out there. So, like, he did a stream with that character. I think at that point he was like level 95 or 6, maybe even higher. Like, he was top 5 or so ranked on the, what is it, hardcore, Jeff, or whatever they call it. Like, where like, you know, if you die, your character's done.
Oh, yeah, basically. Yeah.
And so he's doing this live stream. And he didn't know how to operate the maps. He's like saying weird shit. Like, so people that play the game are like, you know, his equipment's fucking awesome.
It was the same thing when Elden Ring came out. He was like posting his build, and people were like, "Dude, what is wrong with you? Like, what are you talking about? He's like carrying two shields and stuff. You're like, dude, are you fucking stupid? Like,
well, so like his equipment is fucking phenomenal, but he's
I'm
like,
sure going, it is.
It's only a level 52 staff. That's a little low, but like, no, the staff is, it's level 52 is the minimum requirement for it.
Like, that's, oh like, my God,
level,
dude.
It's the level you need to be to,
yeah, to carry staff. Yeah.
It's like one of the five best weapons in the game. Like, his yeah, armor, like, this is level 63 armor. I'm a level 95. Dude, it's the, like, most, so it's not the best, but
it's the most pathetic behavior in the world. Like, why are you trying to pretend that you're cool or like good at a video game so that like gamers will think you're cool or something? Like,
and are yeah, you 12
years old?
Like Path of Exile, he did this with Diablo too, where he was like, I'm like ranked number one in the world in Diablo. Like, yeah. And it's like, this isn't it's not a skill game. Like, I'm not saying there's not skill to like high level Diablo or Path of Exile play, but it's a game that like mostly your level, your rank in it is because you've put hours and hours in. Like, it's not,
yeah.
It's not like you're a Street Fighter player ranked number one in the world. Like, you know, you can look at their win loss record and be like, this guy's fucking amazing. Like, dude, who are you trying to impress by just saying I like poop socked 150 hours a week?
I cannot stress this enough. You are the richest man in the world, and you're faking that you're playing a game to look cool to people on the internet. Like, well, dude. Loser behavior.
And I think it happens every time he kind of goes into, because it's the same thing that kind of happened when he bought Twitter, is he started talking about stuff and programmers and engineers were like, you're saying what? Bullshit. Like, none of this makes sense.
Yeah, you it's don't like actually know what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yes. And I think he wants, like, you know, quote unquote, he's super rich, he's high on academy, he's able to run like 15 companies and play video games all the time, isn't he? Again, you look at his humor, you look at whatever. The guy has the mindset of a 15-year-old
edgelord
who wants to be popular and cool, and he thinks this is how he does it.
He literally has the mindset of like a 13 to 15-year-old. Mm-hmm. And he like bought Twitter and made it appealing to someone that would be that age or something. Yes. Like, oh, you know, it's cool. You can see fucking people getting killed. I don't want to see that, dude. The fuck is wrong with you? Like,
it's one of those things where, you know, we so often compound intelligence with money, and I think people just have bigged him up and have never again. It's come up
stupid.
Yeah, because it's come up whenever he enters an avenue where people are like, "Wait, I know this game. This isn't how this game works." Or I know engineering. This isn't how it works. And it's like, why, like. Admit you don't know something. Oh, don't talk about it. Like, I'm sure he plays video games. Just stick to the path.
Just like it for real. Like, don't. Here's what you do. You're the richest fucking person in the world. You fuck off and you go play your fucking game in your fucking mansion. And don't worry about what people think about you on Twitter and shit. Like, what the fuck?
And like, if you do want to be part of the community, then just talk about it normally. Like, you don't have to be the best.
He is like, that is the saddest fucking human being I've ever seen. Like, it's just really fucking sad.
Well, don't worry. Very shortly, he's going to be in charge of the Department of Government Efficiency that doesn't exist, but he's going to be in charge of it. So. Elon Musk is a weirdo.
I've been raging about this but... for like a month.
I didn't know I was gonna set you off.
I'm glad I did. Ask Sean fucking like I set him off about it because like I was going to him, I was like, dude, I just saw like this is back when it happened, like right after the game came out. I'm like, I saw Elon Musk as a level 91 character, and I was like, started snapping about it, and he started snapping about it, and then he was the one. He was the first person that showed me, like, people on Reddit piecing together that it was fake. Sean hates Musk so much that I think after Trump won, he saw some stupid fucking tweet from Musk and he shut down his fucking Twitter account. So.
Yeah, so weird stuff out there happening. He's a sad, sad man. Not sad, though. Well, hopefully. I'm hoping not sad. Is our top 10 list for the year.
A little sad.
They could be sad.
I'm sad. Well, I'm not sad because this year is going to be better than the top 10s that we're revealing. So we've moved on.
You think this year's going to be better?
Yes. 2025 will be better.
Okay. You said so.
There's going to be GTA 6. There's going to be Civ. There's
going to be a new Switch.
Assassin's Creed. There's a new Switch.
New system.
It's going to be a better year.
New monster.
Better year.
I can't poo-poo a year, though, where I got a new Zelda. I got some RPGs and stuff. I got an awesome platformer.
I really like my top 10. I think these are really good games.
I'm sure I've had stronger years in general, but again, like any year that has a couple games like that, I can't be too mad. But I do think, I mean, just based off the Switch 2 alone, I think you're right, Tony. I think there's going to be a ton of software for it, like in the first 6 months of it. I think we will get it by June or July.
It's going to be fun to just like, you know, I mean, well, even if we don't get it, it's just going to be fun, like having a new system out there and to talk about. And, because it's been a bit.
For a fucking Switch, it's been a long time.
Like it was COVID was when the systems came out. So
before
And the Switch is eight years old now.
8 years in March,
So, it's time. It's time.
I guess that's what happened with the death of handhelds, because like they were not off cycle, but they would be the ones in between. And Microsoft and Sony pretty much have sank their schedules, so they come out around the same time.
Although I have a feeling that it, you know, if Microsoft releases another system, and I think they will, it'll be before, like a year before PlayStation 6 or whatever. I have a feeling we're gonna get a new system next year, and the year after.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of rumors about handheld this and, you know, portable that, so we shall see.
Yeah.
You think the new Xboxes and PlayStations are coming next year?
I think we'll get something from Xbox next year. I think PlayStation's a little bit further out.
Really? All right. I feel like they're just getting started, both of them, but...
Yeah, but it's also, like, it's kind of past the halfway mark for the generation on paper. Even if they ask, 7, 8 years? Like, it's been over 4.
Yeah, I know. It just feels like
it doesn't affect the generation that started yet.
Yeah,
I feel like those couple COVID years where there weren't that many releases, and
And I'm not sure that I think Switch 2 is going to be fun, Jeff. But I think we've reached a point where these new systems coming out, the games that are coming out aren't going to be much different than what we got previously. I think we saw that with this generation.
How do you mean?
Yeah, like the visually, they're not going to be that much better.
Oh no, I'm just happy. I'm just happy that you know, the Switch needs a little bump. It's very old, and just fucking new games, man. Like, you know, they've been sitting on shit. Like, you know that, like, they've actually supported Switch well through this last year, but like, you know, they're sitting on the real shit. You know what I mean?
Absolutely, because like, well, what did we get last? I mean, we got a fun Zelda game, you know, the Princess Peach game, and like Mario, a bunch of Mario
remasters,
remasters, and remakes, and RPG games. So,
yeah.
Well, let's jump into it. Our top 10s for 2024. Tony, since you seem the most down on the year, why don't you kick it off for us?
All right, number 10, Dragon Age Bride Protector. Sorry, Veilguard.
Oh,
Dragon Age. It's called the Veilguard, right? Like,
yes, it is the Veilguard. Yes,
it's so weird.
It's an odd title. Fun game, not really what I would expect from the Dragon Age series. And for what it is and the kind of gameplay it is way, way, way too long.
More action-oriented, right?
Yeah, it's an action game, and action games are typically like, you know, 10, 12 hours, and this game is like 50 hours. And it tells like a really like, I mean, there's a really good story in there, but the story is interspersed with lots of the same gameplay over and over and over again. Like you do, it does change as you get different characters who do different things and they interact slightly differently, but you're always yourself. So since you have to play at every mission, your character is always exactly the same. So it does get kind of samey after a while. So a game that probably could have been better, put it in 10th spot.
All right. And I don't think any of the rest of us played Dragon Age: The Veilguard. I don't know if we did this last year, but we kind of implemented it for when Jeff and I did our top 10 movies. If we call out a game on our list and somebody has it higher, just kind of tell us to wait on talking about it so we don't repeat. We'll just wait till whoever has it highest, and then we can all talk about it.
Big discussion.
Then. Yeah. I'll go next here. My number 10 is The Legend of Zelda: Echoes of Wisdom.
We can wait to talk about it.
All right. Earl, what do you have?
I don't think anybody's going to have this on the list. I don't think anybody saw this coming, but I'm disappointed in myself as well. I will just prefix this all, and I think I said this in the years past. I have a special place in my heart for video games. I get to play it with my friends. There's just something about, you know, playing with them that just makes it more enjoyable and fun. And I've been playing this for the last few weeks, but Suicide Squad Kills the Justice League.
Oh, wow. Well, I did not see that one.
on your list?
I've been playing it the last 2 weeks, and I'm like...
Earl, we need to sentence you to penance for this. I don't know
Is this
why.
The bad game that everyone hated?
Yes.
It's fun to play. It has so many problems, but the actual movement and traverse is really fun. I think the banter between the team is kind of nifty. The costumes, they're not as over the top as because you could tell they stopped supporting the game. But it kind of reminds me of Anthem in some ways, where...
Also, another great game.
Fundamentally, not great.
Great comparison.
But it was fun to play because it had a movement system that was very unique. And I went back and forth, like, I don't know if I like this game or I just like playing it with my friends. And it's true.
Sometimes that's all that's needed. Yes. Sometimes you just need a game that you can play with your friends, and that's fun.
And you just go and you kill a bunch of stuff in very flashy ways. Granted, there's like 4 enemy types that you fight over and over and over again. But I not see this coming. But there you go.
Hey, and for $5 or free now, if you have it, if you have on PlayStation or whatever, like, hey, it's Earl's 10th best game of the year. So
play it now while there's still a server to play on.
I was gonna say this week. I think the last update came out yesterday, so
they did add an offline mode into it.
Yes.
Yeah. So you can play it in it forever now. Jeff, what is your number 10?
Excuse me. My number 10 is Black Myth Wukong, which I did not get very far. So that's probably my set number 10. But really great combat, really great graphics, and art, like really cool art direction. Levels that are like little tunnels where you just fight shit. But it just felt really good and looked amazing. I just, unfortunately, like, I could not hang. I was not good enough to get past. I think I got like 5 or 6 bosses in, so that's why it's a higher, but it definitely, I think, deserves some notice for, Game of the Year's list or whatever.
Super hard?
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Right, yeah. Very hard.
Some would say too hard.
Yeah. I would too. Tony, what do you have at number 9?
Wait, did you go?
I did. Mine was Zelda. We're waiting to talk about that.
Okay, that's right. That's why I have no memory. We just kind of passed on. Pal World. Which I might figure no one else has on their list. I like Pal World. Pokemon in an open world survival type deal. It's clearly not done yet. I think they still have a lot of work to do in the game, but as they add stuff to it, it gets cooler and cooler, and as they add more pals and more maps, and like it's finally coming around to something that might be end up being super, super cool. And looks like it has like a long future ahead of it in terms of like new games and a broader universe. So
you said new maps, Tony. Are they like adding new biomes? Is it just like
it keeps getting or? Yeah, they keep adding like new biomes, new areas, new places to go. It's
neat.
On the up and up. So Pal World might be a game worth going back to.
It's not 1.0 yet, right? It hasn't officially released.
It is not. No, it is not officially released. And in fact, you might want to wait for that. That would be a great marker. There were a bunch of games this year that were early access that I played that I was like, this game's on the way, but not quite there yet.
Well, hopefully it gets to 1.0. You know, Nintendo's suing them, so.
Yeah.
We'll see how that goes. All right, Tony has Pal World at number 9. My number 9 is Dungeons of Hinterberg. I'm assuming we're waiting on that.
Yeah.
Earl, what do you have at number 9?
This also comes with a caveat, and this is a bit different caveat. This one is actually one of my favorite games of last year, but because it was a remake, I just wanted to put it higher up. But I just had a Paper Mario 1000 Year Door. Utterly fantastic. It was probably one of the games I put the most time into last year. But again, it's a remake of a game I loved when it came out originally. It was just, that's why it would be higher if it was a new game. But for what it is, I just really, really enjoyed Paper Mario 1000 Year Door. And I think anybody should play it on the GameCube or on the Switch. So there you go.
Fair enough. I do plan on playing it. Jeff, what do you have at number 9?
Number 9, I have Animal Well. It's also low on the list because I didn't get very far. This one, I can't remember why I didn't get very far. I think it was just like either something else came out. Something broke the spell. You know what I mean? Sometimes like you get really into the game and then something breaks that spell and you're just like, I'll come back to it, and you never do. But what I did play of it was like a really, really awesome fucking take on the Metroid style game, with basically like entirely focused on puzzling and not like really combat or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it had pretty great atmosphere. And I know it has like tons of secrets and stuff that I didn't even barely scratch the surface of because I didn't beat the game. But one day, Animal Well, I'll come back and I will play you. But
and you will say, well.
Yes. Well, why? I didn't put that. No, it's really good. I can't believe I'm the only one here that's played that, I think. But
it was one that I wanted to get to. Yeah, I just didn't get around to. All right. Tony, what do you have at number 8?
I think this might be on someone else's list. Dragon's Dogma 2?
Yeah, not here, buddy.
Oh,
just outside mine. So,
yeah. I don't know. I enjoyed what I played of it, but like, the world gets very samey. You fight the same enemies over and over and over again. There are some interesting aspects to that game. I really kind of like the save system when you initially play is kind of cool because it kind of adds like a journey element to the game and like moving out in the world. On the other hand, it kind of gets annoying after a while. The fast travel is kind of weird. But it's kind of a cool world. I think it really, like, it got a good time in the sun because it sort of came out, but nothing else was there. So it deserves a little recognition for, you know, getting me through the month of nothing. So thank you.
Did you finish it, Tony?
I did not finish it, no, because real games came out.
Yeah. So it's weird because like there's like two areas. There's a, you know, the area you kind of start out in, which is, you know, more traditional medieval castle type stuff and a couple towns. And then like you get to the second area, which is more desert and canyons. Yep. And then there's a third section after everything. Spoilers for Dragon's Dogma 2, but all the water gets sucked out of the world. It's like it's the same map, but like there's super deep canyons and like where the lakes were before, and because like weird shit has happened. But that's where everything is like then on a timer. You have to do a bunch of stuff in a certain amount of time. I did not like that portion of it, but it was an interesting idea.
Yeah, I think that was the other reason I didn't get any farther, was like I got through those first two areas and then I heard you describe the third place. And I was like, I don't really want to do that.
Yeah, it's really weird. And like they put you on like this like schedule, like you have to do X amount of things. And if you like rest or save, then you start losing progress. I mean, I guess you could use potions and stuff to refill your health, but over time, like you lose parts of that, so you do have to rest at some point to gain it all back. Anyway, neat game.
We don't want to shit on it completely. Like the pawn system is super cool. Like getting to meet other people's pawns, who then know where stuff is in your world.
You and Jeff, your pawns. Carried me through like the early part of that game because you were so far ahead of me that I was able to bring you guys in, and you were just like wrecking enemies and shit for me.
I got one from somebody that was way leveled up that carried me, but I don't know, it wasn't one of us, you know what I mean? Like it's somebody on my friends list or something. I was like, hell yeah, dude, thank you, person who I don't know who you are.
The pawns on your friends list are free. But anybody out of that, like you have to pay to get them on your team. So, yeah, had it been somebody on your friends list, Jeff, that was carrying you, that's neat.
I think it was. Do you have to pay real money? Because then I could say for sure.
No. You have to pay. Like your currency. In the game.
I think it was somebody random on my friends list was playing that game and was like way ahead of everybody, and so like I got carried a lot by that. That was helpful, but I just didn't. For me, that game
you know what, it's probably one of your friends from not Elden Ring, but one of those other
games. It could be
yeah
I've definitely gathered some like random friends over the years from like playing Elden Ring and shit like that,
Dark Souls and all
like,
that.
I don't remember who they are, but at some point we added each other because we were playing it a couple nights in a row, you know.
All right. My number 8 is Call of Duty Black Ops 6.
Save it.
Okay.
Well, Chris doesn't get to say anything. I'm not going to talk
tonight. Earl, what's your number 8?
Again, you know, I'm not going to do a caveat again. Star Wars Hunter.
Nice.
You know, it's a mobile title on the Switch. I mean, there's no way around
it. It is, yes.
But it's a really fun game. It's a very short, simple game. I've always been a fan of anything that allows me to. I have like 20 minutes. You know, I got dressed in the morning. I don't have to leave for work yet. And we just throw on a game or two, play some quick rounds and be done. There's no stress. There's no like, I got to invest half an hour before I find a save point. It's very simple, very straightforward. I think, you know, it's fewer characters than like an Overwatch or Marvel Rivals. So it's easy to kind of learn them and get to know who you want to be and play those roles. It's also smaller teams. It's smaller teams, quicker games.
4-on-4.
Yeah, really. It's really. I recommend. It's free. I recommend playing it. Recommend checking it out. It's a ton of fun. Really underrated. Especially being that, you know, I don't think Outlaws is anybody's disc, but a bigger Star Wars game came out like 2 months later that kind of took up all the oxygen.
Hunters, I had a ton of fun with when I was playing Hunters. I played it for the first two seasons that they had. Ton of fun. Like it's like you, Earl, I think it was kind of the appeal of being able to play something for like 5-10 minutes and make progress, because like the matches are only 5 minutes apiece. So
yeah,
really neat. Jeff, what do you got at number 8?
My number 8 is Elden Ring, Shadow of the Erdtree. I'm a well-noted, huge Elden Ring fan, so no surprise it made my list.
You can save it, Jeff. Oh, wait, no, never mind.
There are areas in this game that are some of the best art that From some software has ever done. And there are levels. There is one level in particular that I think is among the best that they've ever done. Like, just this huge, sprawling castle that fucking goes on for, like, I think 10 floors? It's insane. That you can actually approach that level from different sections of the map. That's how big the level is. I think what holds it back a bit, and it is, like, for a DLC, it's basically like a full game. It's obviously not as big as the base Elden Ring game. I think the main thing holding me back for me is that they turned it up to 11, which I don't need From Software turning anything up to 11. Like, I'm good with them just being their regular self. I think they've really struck a good balance with the base game of Elden Ring. Like, that, like, will push you a few times here and there, and you can always get help. Here, it was like, I was at some point, I don't have the patience for this. Like, I need to get help for, like, most of these bosses. So I think I, like, lowered it a bit. But, yeah, it's a really nice DLC for that game.
You did finish it, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I definitely did not finish it on my own.
No.
I think I beat, like, two of the big, like, I think there's, like, 5 or 6 big bosses in it, and I beat 2 of them on my own. But good Lord, like, the final one, somebody had to come in and help me. I can't even remember who did it, but, like, there's no way.
That's the one thing I heard from lots of people. That it's extra hard.
Because I think it's General Radahn again, who is, like, the halfway, like, he's the boss you fight halfway through the original Elden Ring. And he's very scary in Elden Ring until, like, you've played him a bunch and you're just like, fuck this guy. Like, you know, he's no big deal. But at the end of this game, holy shit, dude. Like, it's like you'd walk through the gate and you're just fucking dead. Like, as you're walking through the fog gate, I was just like, I'm getting help.
Tony, what do you have at number 7?
So I have NBA 2K25. I think I kind of shit out the one from last year because it was not very good. But this year they added some really cool quality of life things into the My Player that make, like, playing through the NBA easier. Like, you spend less time running around the city, like the gym and the training facility are, like, right next to the arena, so you can easily get from one to the other. There's a storyline that is, like, actually pulled into the NBA stuff. Like, not only do you have, you know, your career and you're trying to make your player as good as possible, but you have dynamic things happening. Like, for instance, one of the other players on your team will get mad at you if he's not getting the ball enough. And so you get, like, goals to, like, give him the ball more, like, increase his scoring range, and you'll get rewards for that kind of stuff. Or he'll demand a trade if you screw it up. So there's those kind of, like, fun things happening while you're playing. There's, like, the game is a lot more goal oriented than it was in the past. So before, you kind of eventually just became a starter because your player's good.
Right.
Now your coach will sit and he'll break it down. This is what you need to do to become a starter. You need to have, like, you need to outscore the player that you're behind by this many points in this many games. So it's all very, like, cut and dry it in a way that you could see, which is super cool.
I do like that, because, like, in other games like MLB or NHL, not like Madden, basically you're very rarely that far behind, but, like, other games that have long seasons, like, not, they don't tell you. It's just like,
yeah,
something behind the scenes is like, all right, you've hit that. It's like, well, what is it? Like, I would love, like, that's awesome that they've added that into this.
Yeah. One of the most fun things for me is you get to choose, like, a season goal for your player.
Mm-hmm.
And my player, so he's a rookie, so I chose the goal that he wants to demonstrate that he is the best rookie in the NBA, which isn't just, like, winning rookie of the year. So he gets a dynamic goal every time he's facing another team with a really good rookie. And so that game becomes special. Like, you have to outperform that particular player within that particular game, which makes it like not just another game. Like, you're paying attention. Like, how many points does that guy have? What's his game rating? Is he doing well? Maybe I need to double off of the player that I'm on to like make sure he gives up the ball so he doesn't do anything on this possession. Like that kind of stuff that you wouldn't normally think of while you're playing, because normally you're just kind of robotically like trying to score as many points as possible.
Right.
So I think that makes it like a much more interesting season experience than you had before. So
that's cool. Yeah. All right. I think I finally am going to get to talk.
Let's see.
Earl said that he didn't think anybody else could have another Star Wars game on their list, but I do have Star Wars Outlaws.
Come on, Earl. This is the most predictable thing.
Never. And it is my number 7. We good here? We're good, right?
Well, no.
Damn it. Yeah, Outlaws got a little bit of flack early on. They cleaned it up a lot since then. But you know, early on people were like, it's, you know, issues with it. There were some weird graphical stuff. There was weird bugs. I didn't run into a ton of them when I was playing it, but they were there, and I think people did kind of snub their nose a little bit at it. That and it being an Ubisoft game, people just seem to not care about Ubisoft at all anymore. But I really ended up liking this quite a bit. I think the cast of characters is neat. It's a heist game at the end of the day. Like, you're putting together a team to perform a heist at the end. So you're kind of like recruiting your team members, and they all have like a long kind of story thread and you kind of getting them and then what you need to do to pick them in. So kind of imagine like the Mass Effect loyalty missions.
Yeah.
So like, that's cool. Like a little bit longer than that, like threaded out over a couple of different missions of you trying to like get these people to join your crew. You don't have a selection. Like it is locked in. It is a very kind of like, it's not linear. You can choose like which people you want, but you don't, these people are locked. So like the bomb maker is always going to be the same character. You don't get to choose who that is, but they have like a neat kind of storyline throughout it. I kind of liked the gameplay. I thought it was fun. You know, it's third person open world. I thought the shooting was cool. I like the fact that you're not a Jedi in it.
Are you ripping off like, the Empire like in Andor, or is it just something?
At times? Yes. At times you are. It's yes, I mean, we talk spoilers here. Yes, you are fucking over the Empire, because the guy who's running this crime syndicate that you get introduced to at the beginning.
But it's not like Andor, where it's like a political objective to it. Like
you're doing it. Ultimately, it ends up being you're helping the Rebel Alliance, and you're also helping this other dickhead. Like, he hires you, and he has like ulterior motives. Basically, it's he wants to hook up with the Empire, so he wants to fuck over this other guy who's running this crime syndicate for the Empire. It's there's some neat like back and forth. The story's pretty cool. Characters are neat. There's like a neat mother daughter dynamics. The character you play, her mom leaves her as a kid, just on a Canto Bight, which is the casino world. If you've seen The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
So that like that's where the game starts out on. You're there. You're exploring kind of these you're exploring these worlds that you've seen in movies before, but outside of Tatooine, which is neat because you get to explore the two big cities there and Jabba's Palace. But also it's like, we've done Tatooine like 42 times in games. So
I've never been to Tatooine in a game. I don't know what you're talking right. about.
Exactly. But that, and this is neat too, because like it's not just, you know, open world on the ground. You then fly your ship up into space, and there's like an environment around the planet that you can kind of explore, and there's space stations you can go to that are up there. And it's all, you know, back and forth. Like you fly down to the surface. It's a loading system, but like the game never like stops. It's not like in Starfield where it's like, we're going to show you this loading screen. Like it looks like you're flying into the planet and then landing. It's really cool. I really enjoyed it. I mean, big surprise, as everyone knows, I'm a huge Star Wars fan, but yes, I had quite a good time with Outlaws. Earl, what do you have at number 7?
Star Wars out. No, I have Picross S Namco Legendary Edition. I really don't think there's anything to say. I just have Picross any new versions. They're just my go-to puzzle games. They're great brain tickers and puzzlers, and I love when they actually do video games. One, I have the Sega one on the Switch, and I have the Konami one on my phone. It's great seeing them come to life and make, oh yes, I know this game, or I know this ride or whatever. So yeah, buy Picross, especially whenever there's a new one, because there's a new one every year. The other ones go on sale for, you know, 25% off. Is a great time to stock up.
So is this one all like I'm assuming Namco, like Pac-Man and Galaga and other Namco properties? Cool.
You named two and I called it a day.
I'm like trying to like what else do they have. I'm sure they have a ton, because Namco always has like arcade collections. It's just none of them are popping to my head, but Pac-Man and Galaga are two big ones that they have. Cool. I like Picross. I didn't realize that had come out. All right, Jeff, what do you have at number 7?
Another DLC. Diablo 4, Vessel of Hatred. Fuck all the haters. Diablo 4 is good. This was more Diablo 4. The new class is awesome. New little mini campaign, but didn't feel too short. They're finding ways to keep you, you know, they're keeping, like, continuing to refine the game, whether you get the DLC or not. Mm-hmm. Usually for me, it's like I play through whatever, you know, either the main campaign or this. I play through, you know, the new campaign, messed around a little bit in the end game, and, you know, something else came out or whatever. But still, I don't know. I like Diablo. This was more, they're only adding to and improving Diablo 4, which I already thought was good, so it makes the list.
How long is, I mean, you finished it, right, Jeff?
Yeah.
Like, how long do you think the act is?
Well, I think we've kind of talked about this before. It's like, it's one act, but it's split up into like 6 chapters. So it is like, it would be bigger than any act in the main game.
Which is long for, you know.
Yeah, like, I think.
The main game's long.
I think chapter, whatever it is, of the main game is very long. It's like hours. This, I'd say, a good 6 to 8 hours out of something like that. It's, you know, it doesn't feel like a full ARPG, but it's, you know, it doesn't feel slight either.
Chunky. Yeah. That's good. And the new, the Spirit Walker, is that the
Spirit Born, I think? Spirit Born. It's very fun. Yeah.
Cool. Tony, what do you have at number 6?
MechWarrior 5 Clans. I've made fun of this game a lot while I was playing it, because the story is basically C movie dialogue and acting. It's really hard to listen to. But the actual gameplay with the mechs is a lot of fun. Being able to design and reconfigure them, and like unlock new ones. There's a really cool RPG element to playing through all of the missions and upgrading all of your star mates. It is kind of fun in this game to sort of play as opposed to the rest of the MechWarrior games. Play as the baddies, like you're clearly the bad guys. So it's kind of a fun new way of getting through it. The game goes on for too long. because the gameplay does get kind of samey. But you know, it's hard to complain about a game being, you know, too long after you played it for 30 hours. Like, okay, I'm getting tired.
Yeah, you got your money's worth out of it.
Yeah, absolutely, especially since it was on Game Pass, so I didn't have to pay anything.
Definitely got your money worth out of it.
Quite nice. Enjoyable. Makes me want to go try MechWarrior 5 Mercenaries, which I've heard is better with similar gameplay. So
that was the prior one, right?
Yeah, that's the prior one. I think I played the tutorial and stopped, so I need to go back to that one and actually play it for real.
All right.
I think because it has, what is it, 3 or 4 player co-op? So
player co-op.
Oh, 5 player co-op.
You're running a star, which is a group of 5.
Okay, but it has that same problem I have with other things, where I think the person who controls the game makes progress and nobody else does.
Yes, no one else does. So I did try the co-op with one of my friends, and he just basically dropped in as one of my squad mates in their mech and didn't get anything from it in his personal playing.
That sucks, because it's a long game, right? So
yeah, it is. Like, you could like play through the whole game together like that, but yeah, it's not. I don't even know if he could see the cutscenes or anything. I don't remember.
He just has a black screen. Great.
That I did not know.
All right. I think I'm going to get to talk again, because I don't think, actually, the next two at the very least, because I don't think anybody else played Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. No? Yes, that's what I
watched my son play like 25 hours of it or something, but I did not play any myself.
I love Final Fantasy VII. I mean, I love Final Fantasy as a series. I don't know if their decision to split Final Fantasy VII's remake or reimagining into 3 different games was the best idea. I'm enjoying what they're doing. I think Remake is the better game. It's definitely tighter, doesn't take as long. Rebirth took far too long for me to play. 75 hours, I think. Yep, 75 hours for me to finish it.
That's
so
just about right. That's how I like it.
Okay, so Jeff's in. He's in for the melodrama of and ridiculous character interactions, because Jeff loves story in his games.
I like a nice 75 hour game. I like to, you know, if I like a game, I want to be able to like really dig into it.
You can dig in. That's the thing, Jeff. There's probably like out of that 75 hours, there's probably 20 hours of it is straight story. So you might not have as much fun with it.
I think that might have been why I fell off of Persona 5, where it was just too much. It was so like, it was like at least 50% of the time you're just like hearing people talk. Just like, dude, let's go.
Anyways. There's lots of talking, but it, as somebody who really likes Final Fantasy VII, being able to explore that world, the old iconic locations, from the end of Disc 1 and Disc 2 in that game, it's super cool to be able to go in and just kind of see all this stuff and revisit some of these iconic scenes. They're happening a little bit differently in this, because it's not a straight retelling. It's kind of an alternate universe happening going on in this. But I think the gameplay is fun. I ended up doing like 95% of everything in the open world. There's some like special bosses out there that I just was not leveled up enough to do, but did mostly everything in the game. It's a ton of fun if you enjoy Final Fantasy, and especially VII. You like those characters, and you like action games. So worked quite well for me. Earl, what do you have at number 6?
It's him, Mario. Mario and Luigi Brothership.
Oh yeah, that was a game.
Jeff and I have varying opinions on this game.
No, I swear to you, I was excited for it, and then like it came out, it felt like me and everyone else forgot about it.
No, you're not incorrect in that regard. Again, from a marketing standpoint, I don't get the point of having three RPGs of the same franchise in a calendar year. Especially being that the two prior were beloved remakes of really like landmark, like Super Mario RPG is the first, and a lot of people love it for whatever reason. And Paper Mario is considered the best Paper Mario, and probably top two or three Mario RPGs. If anything, it should have been reversed. It should have been a new game first and then two remakes. I'm not Nintendo. That said, I think this is a really nice return to form. I wasn't the biggest fan of some of the later 3DS versions, like Dream Team and Paper Jam So-So. But this is nice. You know, it keeps the core just Mario and Luigi again. It's, you know, the combat, I think the combat's different enough from the other ones that I didn't get bored of it. I think they animate so beautifully in this game.
It's pretty really different looking.
Yeah, I really kind of want that style in like an actual Mario game at some point, or something bigger. You know, the story's cute. The enemies are decent. The Okos are cool to see. It's just a really fun Mario RPG. Again, no idea from a marketing standpoint why you would do, like I said earlier, if it was up to me, I'd recommend Paper Mario before this one, but this one's new and I did enjoy it. So that's why Paper Mario's lower, even though I prefer it more.
That makes sense.
I would probably get this one if and when I got one of them, just because I played through the Thousand Year Door. Yeah.
But I think it was, and I could be wrong, I think this was announced after the other ones came out.
Yeah, no. Yeah.
I already had Paper Mario, but yes, I think I would have been with you.
I think it got like middling reviews. I think that might have been part of it for me, but like
it was very, it's very talky and it's very start stop. It's very, it's a lot. It's kind of like the, I don't want, it's kind of like the Paper Mario games on like the Wii U and I think even the one on Origami King, where it's very much more of an adventure game with RPG battles from time to time. We're going around trying to solve problems and stuff and not necessarily like, oh, you're doing combat's just a means to an end.
By the way, Origami King, I thought was pretty good.
Oh, Origami King is probably my second favorite Mario, Paper Mario game.
Yeah, a little underrated in my opinion.
Is that the one that had like the cool battle system?
Yeah.
But I also think that was one during the pandemic. And I think the pandemic years just don't count.
Jeff, what do you have at number six?
What do I have? Oh, you get to talk. Call of Duty Black Ops 6.
Well, you can hold them.
It is, I think that this series has been at a really high quality for like a while now. I mean, it always has been, I guess, in a way, like, but it got a reputation for a while of just being cookie cutter or whatever. And there are some bad ones, right? Like, I thought Ghost was bad, but that's over 10 years ago now. There was the one that they did, I want to say it was maybe Black Ops 4 or something that had like no campaign.
Four didn't have a campaign. Yeah.
Last year, I did not play the one last year. I heard it was trash, but like all the ones I've played over the last decade have been great. And this continues that. Takes some really big swings in the campaign. Like, I just love that, you know, for like a series that's known as being like this big, crazy action, like brain dead franchise that, like, no, not really. Like, the levels in the campaign are very different from each other. And this one continues to take some big swings. Like, there's the one level that, like, kind of felt like you're playing Bioshock, where it had, like, four different, you know, sections of a lab that you fought four different bosses in. And the multiplayer, I think, is fun again. It's fun every year. the zombies, what I played of it, it was neat, but like I've never gotten into that.
I have no idea what I'm doing in zombies ever.
What is the goal? I don't know. No one's ever been able to explain to me. Like, I ask people that love it, but they're like, I don't go. I mean, like, is there an end? Like, it's weird because it'll be like, you could exfil every couple rounds, but like, what if I keep going? Is there an end? I don't know. Who cares? I think the campaign alone is worth checking out. A lot of these recent Call of Duty games, I think the campaigns are like kind of underrated. So,
Chris, I'm absolutely with you. Like, the campaigns in, I think Vanguard's the only one I haven't played recently.
And that one is not like, not taking big swings, but it's just fun to be in World War II.
Yeah.
Again, yeah, I don't know. Like,
but this one, neat continuation off of Cold War.
Yeah, which is awesome too.
Cool ideas here. Like, there's a hub base that like you kind of go back to after the missions. You can interact. You don't have to. Like, you can kind of just, you know, go and pick the next mission. But you can also interact with your teammates. There's shit to find in the base. Like, there's like a weird, like, there's a puzzle.
There's a series. Like, there's a series of puzzles that like cover your entire base. Like, you know, your base is like this house that you're like hiding out in. And so, yeah, there's like, it takes you to every corner of that house and you're solving puzzles. And it's like completely optional and really neat. And also, I really love too, that eventually at the end of the game, like, your safe house, like this base, becomes a level because it gets, you know, people are coming to fucking take it down.
Yeah, like the final level is at your base. Yeah, it's really neat. And like, this is a place you've been at, so like you know the layout, right? Like, a lot of the problem with Call of Duty, that's a problem, but like, they drop you into an area and like you don't
know what's going on.
Like, know where you're at. You don't know what's going on. And here it's like, all right, defend it. All right, well, I know, like, there's only like one or two ways in here. So like, we're gonna post up here and take them as they come down the driveway.
And did you like expect that to happen? Like, I did not see that coming. No. I was like, oh, that's really, I've never seen that done in a game before, where it's like you have your like little hub area, or the town that you return to, right? And you're so used to it. And all of a sudden, like, that gets put in jeopardy. And then the game was like, oh shit. Like, I don't know. I've never seen that done before, where your safe house gets attacked. Like, that's a great idea.
It was really neat.
Yeah.
They actually, that is also a level in a multiplayer. So it's a multiplayer that comes up. I really like that one. I really enjoyed the multiplayer in this as well.
Yeah.
I played a ton of it. I prestiged, which I haven't done since Advanced Warfare. It's like a decade ago.
Crazy. Yeah.
Like, it just really hooked me. I was like, this is a ton of fun. The maps are fun. Now they're like adding one or two every couple months, so like, you're getting a new map.
I did do an update the other night and I played a match. I was like, oh god, I'm so bad. But
I like that you can just select, like you can
totally filter your experience to how
you want. So it's like, I only want to play team deathmatch and kill confirmed. So like, I can unselect everything else and just have them. And it just, you know, pits me into matches with those people that are playing those maps and those modes. It's really, really good. Like, it's a really solid Call of Duty. I'm excited to see what they're doing.
Tony and Earl, you guys didn't try it out.
I tried the last one and I didn't get very far. I was just like, I've played this game before. It all feels the same to me. I don't know.
Yeah.
So, Modern Warfare 3 isn't great.
Like, that's you tried the bad one, so there's that.
Yeah. It's not as bad as people kind of make it out to, but it is very much like, oh, I've done this before. If you play a little bit further into it, there are like levels that they do different things.
Yeah.
But Black Ops 6, really, I think, really try some shit.
They're really creative. I would say Cold War and Black Ops 6, like, they really like try to vary what you're doing level. Usually it's pretty fun. No, you're not sold on this?
And, I mean, and
I will try it if I'm utterly bored. But I don't
It's free. Game Pass. I felt like just because it was Game Pass this time that more people would would give it a shot.
I will say
the problem is the size of
yes.
the download.
Yeah, I know, like, but
that is a commitment, and I have to delete other things to get that on there.
No, I hear you.
Huge, huge so. Game.
Here's my testament to that game. I was going to say this before you said that. That game takes up a crazy amount of space, and I'm still keeping it around, you know, a couple months after release. And I'm like, I might get back into it. You know, like I'm like, I don't know if I want to delete it yet. I haven't prestiged yet, like Chris, so I kind of want to do that. Is there an achievement tied to that, Chris, or no?
There is, yeah.
Okay, so yeah, so I might want to do that. So yeah, that's a testament to it, like, because it is precious space on my little 2 terabyte to the drive.
And they're doing like every couple weeks, they're doing like weird event stuff too, like yeah. over the holidays they did this Christmas thing, yeah. like. Now they're doing this Squid Game thing, which I think is super weird. Like I don't know anything about Squid Game outside of that it exists. But like that's weird. Like, so they're having like these weird like events to do. Like, there's always a reason to kind of come back in and play the multiplayer. And the progression loops. So before it used to be you had your zombie character and like that leveled up independently.
Oh yeah, now, that's right. Yeah.
Now it's all together. So you know, if you play zombies, like your guy levels up, you know, your account levels up. Your weapons also level up, and so they can be used across, you know, multiplayer modes.
Yeah, and just getting to like have a weapons bench and all that, and you're in the campaign was awesome.
Well, those are our top bottom six, bottom five. And now we're jumping into our top fives here. Tony, what do you have at number five?
I have Reus 2, which I guarantee is not on any of your lists.
Never heard of this. This is a fake.
I've talked about it before.
So
it's a fun puzzle solving bot god game where you like have the world and you have these giants that you send out onto the world that create like land masses, and then you basically raise humanity. And they do all this cool stuff. Like, you can encourage them to have like little revolutions where they kill their own leaders, or maybe the humans form a cult that calls a dark beast in from the beyond that they sacrifice people to. It's just a fun game to mess around with. It's not really a strategy game. It's more of like number crunching and puzzle solving than it is like strategy. But it is a lot of fun, and it's super addicting. And they just came out with an expansion, so I'm probably going to have to play some more of this game because it was so, so much fun.
The Cataclysm update.
The Cataclysm DLC was an update to the core game. The actual DLC is I think it adds the Ice Age. That is the DLC.
That's cool.
So it adds like an Ice Age biome with like mammoths and saber-toothed tigers and some other cool. I think they add a bunch of leaders, one of which is modeled after Napoleon, which is funny.
Definitely sounds like a you game, Tony.
Absolutely.
Let's see. I think I'm gonna get to talk again because I have another game that I don't think any of you played, and that is Metaphor ReFantazio. Jeff, much like Persona, which I haven't played. But I bet this is way too talky for you.
Well, it's like I like thought Persona was good, and like part of it like is the story elements of it. It's like, there's an abusive teacher at their school, and like that's neat and stuff. But it's like it's too much. It's so much. I heard that the story of this is like really cool. So
I really really like it. So it's the king is murdered early on. And at first you're kind of like setting out to get revenge on the guy you think who murdered him, because that guy has cursed the prince who everyone thinks is dead, and the only way to break the curse is by killing the person who cast it. So like, you know, weird fantasy shit up front. But then the dead king, he comes above everything and he's like, nope, nope, nope. We're not killing anybody. I am going to allow the people to pick their next ruler. And so as you do things, you rank up, like you're getting more influence in society. So you're becoming, there's like a leaderboard that you're jumping up as you do shit. It's really neat. But then there's all like these like intricate stories that are going on. Dungeons are neat. Like they're huge. Normally like you do a dungeon in like a game like this, and it's like even a big one is like, all right, it's like an hour.
Yeah.
These are 3, 4, 5 hours, and there are multiple points.
Love it.
Where like, all right, here's a save point in this level. Hey, you can use this save point to just jump out. Like you can go back to the inn, and like you can just like nope off from doing this right now if you want for a few like in-game days, and then come back. But the thing you have to know, and I think Persona is probably similar, things are on a timeline. So every day like advances the calendar. So
yeah,
you have a mission and it's due by X date.
Yeah, I think that's in Persona.
So like at some point you need to like just sit down and do the dungeon. Like you can't keep fucking off on it. I don't know what happens if you fuck off too much. I assume you probably just get a game over and like please reload your last save and actually play the game. But
so you beat this game?
No, like I am like halfway through. Yeah. Like it is. Yeah. I've played 35 hours of it. And it's okay. Going to be another 78 hour game. But
I think I put 25 in the Persona 5, and I was like, this is good, but it's just like it's not like. I'll sink 150, 300 hours in a game that like really, really hooks me. And like,
yeah,
Persona was not like, I recognize it was good. It was a good game, but it's easy to fall off of it if you're not hooked.
Yeah. I'm currently hooked like, you know, 35 or so hours in, like I'm really, really enjoying Metaphor. I think some of it is just the change of setting. Like I don't really care about Japanese high school kids. And it's still very anime. It's like super anime, which is not something I'm normally into, but like the fantasy setting, the world they've created here, they keep referring to this novel that the main character is holding. And like they read it occasionally, like they'll glimpse at it. And that world is like this future utopian world. That it is implied that it is our world, but I think at the end, because like they keep kind of pointing at it, like it's going to tie in and be like, our world ain't perfect either. Like, I think that that's kind of what we're going to get out of it. But it's really cool. I was like always kind of intrigued by Persona, but the kind of the high school setting and that like that stuff didn't really ever click with me, but Metaphor really is. So
cool.
It's my number 5. Earl, what is your number 5?
Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown.
We're going to hold that one.
Oh, wow.
Wow, I think Chris now.
In your face!
Aha! Jeff, what do you have at number 5?
Dungeons of Hinterberg.
Can we just, it's my number 4. I feel like it's not much different to just talk about it now.
Okay.
I'm fine with that.
How dare you breach protocol?
I know, but I'm like, it's going to come back around to it in like 2 turns.
Definitely not on Tony's list, so.
No.
There's so many things I love about Dungeons of Hinterberg. One, it's like, what if you took a Zelda type game and kind of cut out all the bullshit and like literally you're on a 30-day vacation? I think it's 30 days like vacation in this. And
because she's not on she's on vacation, but it wasn't like because part of the story is she's like, I'm gonna get out of here.
Right away.
So I think it's supposed to be like a week or something, and then she fights monsters. She's like, oh no, this is too much for me.
Is that
But yeah,
continue. Yeah. But it's just like every like it's very structured in that like you don't have to. It's just like, what do you want to do in Zelda? You want to do the dungeons, right? And this is what you get to do. You get to do a new dungeon every day. You know, some of them are not obviously as big as like a regular Zelda dungeon would be. And it's the perfect amount of story too, because then you do your dungeon, you come home at night, you can talk to some people to advance the story. You go to bed, you do the next thing like the next day. The story, I think, is a really incredible like video game story, like it. And kind of just right, like it's just not too in your face. Like you just kind of like being in this like tourist town, and it's really interesting, so that you kind of want to know more about it. It just never happens to me with games. So like, I think the story, the setting, and all that like really stood out to me. And then like you're just like mainlining fucking Zelda gameplay into my veins. So I'm just like, cool, dude. Like this all, you know. Zelda gameplay with like also you're like upgrading your weapons or getting better weapons, like, you know, kind of a mix of that and like an RPG. Like there's like very little I can say about Dungeons of Hindenburg I did not like. I really loved it, and I'm not the only one that played it. I like open the.
Well, the first thing I was gonna say is I mean. Based on Tears of the Kingdom, Breath of the Wild, I think getting Zelda dungeons is the only thing people want from Zelda games. Because Zelda not strong in dungeons.
What I want from Zelda games.
The shrines, though, are like constantly feeding you that.
Yeah,
like,
but you are finding the shrines not that often. There's a lot of game around that.
Yeah.
But I get your point, and I do agree with you. I think, what was it? When we get to my number three, I can talk about. But I think there was a part of this year, and a part of last year, I should say, and I think there's going to be a big part of this year as well. Where I kind of wanted cozy. I wanted something that was not.
It's the most chill game.
Yeah, it's very relaxing. But it's not like, oh, you don't do anything. I guess you go in, you have these dungeons.
They're sometimes challenging too.
Yeah, they have encounters, they have puzzles, they have boss battles,
they have minecarts.
Yes, I'm a huge, huge fan of minecarts, yes.
They have a lot, you know, and there's a variety of them. There's different, you know, stuff like that. That's great. And then you come back, and I think this is the part that really kind of elevates it. Because, I mean, any game can have dungeons and stuff like that. But, like, yes, you know, we kind of, Chris was talking about what metaphor. It's like, then you get, and you kind of become a person in this town. And the fact that, one, people come to this town just to fight monsters is weird to me. But I'm also like,
awesome.
I enjoy the premise of like found a way to make an RPG that's modern, because so much of it tends to be like, you know, fantasy. It's either like, you know, like ancient fantasy or like post futuristic fantasy or steampunk fantasy. Like there are very few like RPGs set in what could be in Colorado.
It's about a subject matter that, like, I don't think I've ever seen covered in a movie or anything. Where it's like, what is it? What is being a like tourist town? Like, you know, what does that mean? Like to the people that live there.
I've seen it covered in movies and TV shows, but it's that.
It's very like not like
it's probably rare. Like you.
I like the kind of like other side of that though is like, what happens if magic returns to the world?
Yeah.
like something that you thought was like, it's something I've always like toyed with writing a story about, like bringing like magic back into modern day setting. Like,
and they turned it into
capitalism.
Yeah. I love that. Like, it's so fucking awesome. And then like the other thing I like about it is like the vibe of it. Is like when you get done hang out at night and you're like getting to know these people. I don't know, dude. It's really incredible. Like it has that feel like when you're on vacation, when you meet people that like, you know, you have a really good time with them, but you know, this is like a finite thing. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Well, the thing I thought you want to say, which I do think is ruining a lot of stuff, is it is also dealing with burnout, because part of the reason you go on this vacation. she needed time away from work. And she,
yeah.
Yeah.
And it, I think that's what I often don't see tackled. And I think it's something a lot of us are going through since COVID, is just, we need, like, there needs to be a way to disconnect from the world. And listen, if there was a place right now that I'd have to fight monsters, I would not do it for a month. But give me a couple of days to, like, you know, get out some of that aggression and some of that, you know, rage, and just like go to town, I would do it.
Also, like, you go there and, like, your phone don't work, your computer doesn't work, like, the like, new technology, like, outside of, like, the television doesn't really do shit. So, like, you can't be, like, there's, like, one guy, he, like, posts shit on social media, but, like, he has to have, like, a special setup or has to leave the town to do it.
Right. Yeah. You know, this game, man, I think it might be one of, like, the most underrated games of the year. Like, it just feels like us three, like, really loved it, and I didn't hear shit from fucking anyone else about it. I think a lot of people just maybe don't have Xbox, but...
When I was playing, I needed a vacation from Dungeons of Hinterberg.
Oh, wow.
Just didn't work for Tony at all.
No. Did not enjoy the gameplay. I don't think it's good.
Wow.
I mean, that's fair.
I don't think it's
fair. But, yeah, high on Jeff and Earl's list. A little bit lower on mine, but still in our top tens. And then Tony hated it, but, you know. You can't all have it. So,
can't like everything.
Right. Tony, what did you have at number four?
My strategy game of the year, Age of Mythology Retold.
Yeah, my pee break time. I'll be right back.
I mean, I'm not going to talk about it a lot because we talked about it last week quite a bit.
Did we?
Yeah, a couple times.
Several times. Yeah. So
I was just making fun.
But a game that takes, like, what was kind of the ugly stepchild of the Age of Vampires series and makes it into a fully fledged game with a lot more content and a lot of fun stuff to do. I really enjoyed playing through it. I'm not going to harp on it a lot, but best strategy game that came out this year, bar none. Very, very fun. Very good.
Nice. And it was also our co... winner of Best Remake Remaster.
Indeed.
All right. My number four, I'm gonna guess that Tony has this on his as well, but we'll see. Indiana Jones and the Great Circle.
Yeah, you can hold that one for a little bit.
All right. Earl's was Dungeons of Hinterberg. And Jeff, are you back? He has
I
not.
I told him not to go. He did not listen.
He did not listen.
I mean, I could talk about Age of Vampires more, but or Age of Mythology more, but I don't really. He comes back and we're still talking about it.
It's like, well, why is going on? is that Jeff, you back?
Guess not.
I am gonna cut this piece out so that it
we'll pretend sounds, like he never
sounds
left.
Like he never left. Yeah,
well, he can leave, but like that he came back really quickly.
Yes, like because he did you know, very openly say, it is now time to go get a drink.
Or you could just like splice in a clip of somebody going, Jeff, or you say, Jeff, are you back? And you just splice in like, no.
But can you hear me?
We're down to the top three here, though.
No, I mean, you're cutting this part out, right? Because yeah. I feel like there's one game that's going to make 1-2, and it's going to be a very easy night. But we'll
I think they're the top game. I think we all knew coming in what the top game was.
Oh, absolutely. I don't think there's going to be much. I don't think we're going to have to pull knives out over the what we're choosing as our joint number one.
I just didn't expect it to be like everybody would have it so far up. I'm curious who pulled it out first. And that's
yeah, it'd be interesting. It's like, does it show up in the next round, or does it slip into the, yeah, the round after? Or does Jeff whip it out in his next pick? I have a feeling it's higher up on Jeff's list.
Yeah.
Did he like get lost?
I'm here. I don't know what you're getting, I don't know what you guys are talking about.
We're waiting for you. I'm gonna cut this out because Tony very quickly talked about Age of Mythology, and then Indy was my number four, but it's higher on Tony's list, so we're waiting for you. What's your number four, Jeff?
Zelda.
All right.
We can hold off on that one for a little bit.
Okay. Well, for at least a little bit.
We waited all that time.
I went to go pee. It was like 30 seconds.
It was not. We have a time stamp here, too, so we can see.
It's fine. Tony, what is your number three?
Helldivers 2. Which I don't think any of the rest of you played enough of that maybe even be on your list.
Yeah, I still want it.
I need to play more of it. I do want to
play more. Yeah, I mean, I've been thinking about this the whole time as an Earl game. Like you would definitely be way into this kind of game.
I saw it, and it was one of the reasons I really wanted to get a PS5 this year. And yeah, then I think because I got it physical as well, I really do want to get into it though.
Yeah, it is the epitome of that emergent co-op madness. Like anything can happen when you land on that planet, and it is craziness from start to finish. I really like all the aspects of this game, from like the fact that friendly fire is always enabled to just dropping in amongst hordes of robots or aliens or whatever the new faction is. The fact that there's literally somebody running a campaign is super cool. So that like he adjusts it based on what the players are doing and how they're reacting. It's just a totally fun thing.
Refresh my memory, Tony. If friendly fire,
yeah,
if I were to walk up to, let's say, somebody else that's on our team and shoot them in the face with a shotgun, yeah, they just go down, right? Like we can then pick them up. There's like a timer that like you have an amount of time to pick them up before they have to redeploy and you lose a redeployment.
No, I think they can die.
You just okay.
Kill people. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. That's always fun.
Yes, that part is quite amusing. I mean, I think there are some things about it that are less good. I think the barrier to entry, which I think is Chris's problem.
Yeah.
The game, like, once I and my other friend who I'd played a lot with, and Walt had played a bunch of this game, like we were just like gods. And it's less fun to not be a god. I'm walking around and I have like a shield around me, and like I'm putting down like giant orbital strikes of death. And
or it's boring to be a god, right? Because then you're like, all right, well, Chris can't join us in like the higher difficulties, so we have baby difficulty, and it's like, oh, this isn't fun because.
Yeah, one, it's not hard for me because I'm just I'm invincible compared to these guys.
And, but like, and you're not getting the resources either. Like, there's no reason to play there.
That's kind of one of the cool things about it, though, too, is that like you can always like crank up the difficulty, and there's a reason to crank it up. It like encourages you to do that, because if you don't do that, you can't keep upgrading your stuff.
Right.
So a fun game. It's really good to keep playing and keep getting better at. I want to go back from time to time, but it's a lot of skill. Like I would have to start getting back into it.
Relearn it again.
Yeah, yeah.
So
on the other hand, I'd be relearning with my awesome equipment. So that would be something.
You would, yes. they did add a third enemy faction, right?
Yeah, they did, and I haven't played it yet, which is why I can't remember what it is. Not that the robots and bugs weren't awesome and completely different. It's weird to go like from fighting the bugs, and like you have like shotguns and certain equipment you would always use, and you like you wouldn't have to worry about hiding behind rocks and stuff. And then you fight the robots, and now it's a shooter, and they're shooting back, and you're like, oh, I can't stand out in the open because if I do that now, I die.
Yeah, the first time I played it with you guys, and like so we did like a couple of like the you know the big bug planets, and then we're like, hey, let's go check out the Terminator planet, and it was like, oh god, like I'm getting murdered immediately because these guys are shooting me, and they're like super accurate because they're robots, and a completely different vibe and tactics that you need to kind of approach it with.
Yeah, so it's cool. A great game. I wish you guys had gotten into it because it is really.
My number three is Prince of Persia, The Lost Crown. I'm assuming it's not higher on your list, Jeff.
No.
I'm assuming it's not on your list.
It's not on my list.
Yeah.
It's a good game.
So we can talk about it, Earl. Okay. Prince of Persia.
He's like, great. I don't care now.
We passed it. The moment's passed. It is, I will say one of the weird things is like going back to again, that's higher up on your list. And but again, really Trevor Metroidvania. I think again, as much as I enjoyed Dread, I don't think combat has ever been Metroid's strongest suit. Where I think this game gets it. This game's like, yeah, we're gonna throw you. I was watching a podcast recently, or video cast, whatever you want to call it. And somebody was like, the boss encounters reminds them of Smash Brothers, like 1v1, where it's more like, because I mean, it's a tiny arena, and you're like, a lot of it is learning how to parry and dodge and time counters properly to attack bosses. And I think it's just a fun loop with going through that environment, getting new weapon, getting new gears, and just exploring this really gorgeous, gorgeous environment. With a great, I'm a fan of the Prince of Persia games, and I think this was just a really fun turn on that franchise. It's a shame that these games don't sell better, but if you haven't played it, I'm sure at this point you could probably find it for a nickel somewhere. They give it out, but it's a great game to check out.
Yeah, I super loved it, clearly, as a pellet number three on my list, and it's a great mix. So, like, I think the combat is fun. Good, you know, offensive, defensive kind of approach to it, where you do have to kind of learn to parry. You can't just wail away at enemies. But once you do figure out that parry and, you know, the other offensive attack skills that you get as you progress, like, becomes really satisfying to do. And then pair that with some diabolical platforming. There's some like wicked stuff in here.
I enjoy the
aspect of it. I know some people are like, hey, it gets a little too hard. I enjoyed that aspect of it, like where it's like you're doing everything and it has to be near perfect to get through some of these gauntlets.
I
like to think of myself as like good at platforming games, and well, not like I'm not like a savant at them, but like, you know, I'm well versed in platforming games, and there was a challenge here that stopped my progress in the game, so like I can't put it on my list because of that. But like everything up until then I thought was incredible. And I thought like the boss fights, I'm surprised you guys like liked the boss fights, because they remind me of, I hate to say it, like Dark Souls or something like that, where it's like they're actually challenging.
I do wonder, Jeff, like I think I've come to this in a different way. It's like the boss fights in this are 2D. I wonder if maybe it's just the 3D just overwhelms me when I play something like Dark Souls or
I don't know,
or Elden Ring.
And that's, I was gonna say that could be it, because I think it's very easy when like the person's either, you know, right in front of you, behind you, above you. There's only so many ways it can be, and you can kind of, where it's like you're.
But it's in 3D, you get to roll the side.
But
so,
like that's the thing.
That's
like,
helpful.
But it's also like you could roll to the side, or I think And to be fair, like, my thing with Elden Ring and Dark Souls is, honestly, I've just never played them. It's not like me hated.
You might love them.
I could very well be that. I just never played them because all I ever hear about is how. And I don't want. And again, we'll get to this with my number three. I don't necessarily want like to pull my hair out and get frustrated with a video game. The other thing, the big negative I was going to say about Prince of Persia, and this is a problem not with just Prince of Persia, a few games recently. You do not have to use every single combination of buttons to do something.
That is true. Yes.
I think at some point, if you need to start comboing button presses, you're doing too much of the video game.
Yeah, there are some platforming challenges where you're depressing everything like in succession and using all different skills and
with like split second timing.
Yeah,
there was like four rooms you had to get through. I threw like two or three of them, and I was like, you know what, this is really pissing me off, and I deleted it. Like, I got so mad, I deleted it off my Xbox.
And those are mandatory, like you have to do them to progress. Yeah.
But up until then, I was like, this is a really impressive game. Like, if you're into that genre, which I am, it's worth checking out. It's just, again, for me, you know, if I had got past that, which if I've tried enough times, I probably would have. Like, it would have been in my top 10, probably. Like, it is really good, but oh well.
But either way, we did enjoy it. Earl, what is your number three?
My number three is Fjock. I mentioned this game on the podcast, I think, when I was playing it. It is, again, like I said, I think Cozy was just what I needed. This, I think it was the one up to the action, really. And the post-action has not been much better. But it's just, it's not much of a game. You go around, you collect creatures, you do mini challenges with the creatures, which is either collecting more creatures, observing more creatures, chasing the creatures down. There are something like 50 different creatures. You collect enough, it opens up a new part of the map. It is just really chill. It's very calm. It's very cute. It's very charming. And it is just so low stress that I'm like, thank you. It was fantastic. And it's on Game Pass, which, again, if it wasn't, I don't think I would touch this game. But I do recommend checking it out if you just want something for, you know, an hour or two. I think, I mean, it's longer than that, but if you want to play something for a bit, just to kind of get your mind right.
That actually sounds like something I might want to try out. I know you've mentioned it multiple times before. But
and it's co-op too, so if you want to play with somebody.
Nice. Jeff, what is your number three?
My number three is Path of Exile 2.
Right.
Yeah, Musk.
Yeah, yeah. I'm on that Musk scent. I don't half of a game, and I don't expect it to make our top 10 because I would actually like to reserve that for this year when it's complete. But even as half a game, I think this game is one of the best, maybe the best ARPG I've ever played. It's just so engaging. You so have to like actually care about like how you're building your character, how you're approaching bosses. If a boss gets tough, you might have to like change what gear you have, which is just something I've never run into in Diablo because you just plow through everything and just hold the buttons. You cycle through your attacks and you're fine in Diablo. And here it's like, and that might not be the case. You have to like really rethink. You have to always be on your toes. You have to be dodging. It's just kind of like a mix of like kind of my two favorite types of games right now. And, you know, for half of a game, I've put more time into it than any other game this year. I have three different characters going on it, and all of them are at least, you know, level 25. Sorry I don't have level 91, Elon. I know I'm not the coolest gamer in the world, but Path of Exile 2 is incredible. I can't like recommend to you guys enough. If you're into that genre at all, it's so worth checking out. Obviously, it'll be free to play at some point, and if you want to wait for that, obviously, I understand that. But if not, the $30 I paid for this game, dude, I've gotten more than enough out of that. It's just, it's really great. I cannot believe it's only half the game, because there's like so many memorable bosses in just half of a game. Incredible.
Well, hopefully you'll get the rest of the game in this year.
I think it will be complete by the end of the year, and I really hope you guys check it out. If, like, you know, anyone here is into that genre should really check this game out. It really, it's just engaging in a way that no other game in the genre is to me. So,
all right. Tony, what do you have at number two?
Should I hold on to this one, Jeff? It's Indiana Jones and the Great Circle.
Yeah, no, hold it. I don't want to hear anything about it.
I don't think that's what he's asking.
I don't think it's going to be on Jeff's final two here. Let's talk about Indy.
Yeah, I super enjoyed this game. I'm actually not finished with it, but I'm at the very, very end. So very, very close. But I really like it. It gives like a good sense of exploration and actually feeling what it's like to be Indiana Jones. It kind of has a I play it almost as a serial where you're like, I play through like one adventure at a time. And each one feels very self-contained and has a lot of cool stuff. The dialogue is great. I love the wisecracking Indy. I think it's Troy Baker.
Yeah.
Does a perfect Harrison Ford, like absolutely perfect. The game looks fantastic. I don't know. It really gives that feel of those Indiana Jones movies in game form. I didn't know I wanted this. I still couldn't describe I can't tell you what type of game this is. Like, it's not really an adventure game. It's not really a third person action game. It's an Indiana Jones game. And I'm fine with that. That's cool. It's cool to have something that's new and different like this and like a AAA type title. I think that's super awesome. I really enjoyed it.
There's depth in some parts, and then there's like the illusion of depth in other parts. So it's like, it's like, all right, that's not really fleshed out, but you're not going to use it a whole ton. So whatever.
The shooting is kind of weird. The sneaking's kind of weird, but like, so it is, it's like that way in the movies too. It's just very.
Yeah. Especially the sneaking, like he is not like, it's always this kind of like, it's always goofy when he's sneaking around in the movies, and that's kind of how it feels here too. And it's, and then when you get spotted, it's like, oh shit, I guess I got to punch my way out of this or hit people with a fly swatter or a frying pan or whatever the fuck I could find around.
A guitar. There's like an achievement for throwing an apple at somebody. Like, hold on.
You just end up with like a pile of knocked out Nazis or a fascist strewn about. I enjoy the dungeons, kind of like the I think you called them adventures, Tony. Like, they're like they're like mini quests that you can go on, and but you don't have to go to some of these, but sometimes they will just put you in like a full-on hour-long kind of like exploration of a tomb or something. You don't need to do it, it's just, you know, a fun like Indiana Jones adventure to do.
It does flesh out the story to do those too.
Yeah. Like, yeah. You get more information on, you know, kind of like the area you're in or why certain things are happening. You get more information on like some of the characters. I like that, you know, your little companion, like they'll actually talk. Sometimes she gets a little, sports announcery where she starts repeating the same things over and over again, especially if you're in the boat area. She's always like dropping the same few lines every once in a while.
There are occasions where, like, I kind of want to throw you overboard. Stop.
it's like, please stop talking about how you're afraid of the water. Like, yeah. But yeah, like some really cool stuff. There's an awesome whole sequence with a giant snake.
Yes, the snake sequence is cool.
It's really, really fun.
And it's like Indy's worst nightmare, which is kind of like he's confronting his greatest fear.
I know, I kind of agree with Jeff, but like, you know, the boss fights in this are really just like you're punching a big dude. They're not great,
I was talking about the combat in general. I did one boss fight, which was also just that.
So that's all the boss fights, Jeff. Like, there's there's only like three of them, and then there's one with a snake, and that one isn't. You don't punch the snake, you're gonna fight a big, you know, the giant guy a couple times over the course of the game. They do a couple things differently after when you meet up with him again, but sometimes it is just, you know, you're punching them, trying to like move away, get your stamina back up, and then punch them again. Those aren't great because he's a giant. He's kind of a damage sponge. But everything else around
that, I think, is great. In the complete darkness.
Yeah, that one's cool.
That one was pretty cool though.
Yeah.
It uses the same mechanics, but like it's like the one time in the game where the sneaking actually matters.
Yeah, because he's blinded and he can't see you, and it's in complete darkness, so like you can't really see him. So you're trying to like get to the light, make noise so that he can charge you, and then like try to avoid him so you can get a couple punches in, and then skitter away back into the darkness. It's a really cool fight.
Yeah.
Overall, I think I said this a couple weeks ago. It's up there for indie for me. It's like the third best Indiana Jones story, after Raiders and Last Crusade. So, and I know Earl has them flip flopped, but
yes, the accurate correct order.
Different argument there. So,
and going back to Call of Duty, it's the same thing where when I went to play the game, it had an update. And I don't know why it was updating the whole game. And my hard drive does not have another 130 gigs on it when this is already 130. What, it's 113 or something like that.
Yeah, it's huge. Really. It's a massive game.
But I had it installed, but it was updated. And it's like, there's no room to update.
If that's true, I'm deleting it.
Well, again, I haven't tried.
You haven't deleted it yet? I thought you hated it.
Why? No, I've been hanging on because I'm like, I'll get to it after I'm done with this. But I think I'm just going to go from this straight to Avowed.
So it's all right, Jeff. You delete it, put it away, move on.
I mean, I played, what, a third of it. I got through the Vatican.
Yeah. Yeah.
The Vatican. I have an idea what it is. I have an idea what it is. I did not particularly like it.
It's fine. It's not going to work for everybody. I have a feeling we will be talking about my number two again. So I have Balatro at number two.
Save it.
It. All right. Earl, what do you have number two?
Balatro.
All right. Jeff? All right.
Number two is Astrobot.
Astrobot. Save that.
Okay.
So,
I wonder what these games could be.
Tony, are we talking about Balatro now?
We can talk about Balatro, yes.
Can we? Are we at number one? Is that your number one?
It is my number one.
Yeah. All right.
You mean, Jeff, it's your number one as well?
Yep.
All right, let's talk about Balatro.
Just
go ahead, Jeff. Go.
It is... I don't know, man, like... First off, it's a brand new game, right? Like, it obviously it's building off of poker, but it was the one game last year that was just like, this is like a new idea. I don't know how it feels like a game that should have always existed. Like, hey, we're gonna take elements of a roguelike and mix it with poker, and it just works. It's awesome. And I have, like, I'm not even, like, the... I think Tony might be the best one among us to talk about this game, because, like, I've only scratched the surface of it. Like, I just I just got the Joker the other night that makes it, like, that black or red colors count as a flush. Like, you know, like, their suits count the same.
What is it, blurred lines, I think it's
called? Yeah, yeah. I'm like, oh, I'm going to be doing runs, entire runs, just based off this card. And that, like, you know, for a game I've sunk a ton of time into, to go, I've scratched the surface of it, and then go, oh, I was so excited for, like, this one little corner of it that I'm going to do. Like, I still play this game every night, dude. Like, yeah, obviously I took breaks throughout the year. It's nice, like, before I go to bed, like, I think Latro, man. Like, and there's just something iconic about that. Like, where it's like, you created a new game, everyone who plays it loves it, and you could pretty much play it forever. Like, I don't know, dude. It's kind of a no-brainer for me.
Yeah, it's one of those games that I actually had to delete it off my phone because I can't stop playing it.
It does get that bad.
It's just too good and too addicting, and, like, the music is really soothing, and you just kind of get into it, and then you look up and you're like, oh, an hour and a half has gone by. I thought I just sat down. I got obsessed. Like, I love how different the decks are. Like, you switch decks and the game plays completely differently. It's just the randomness of the Jokers and trying to figure out, like, how best to use what you get. It just, it's really cool. And then I like getting to the boss blind and how they, like, tend to turn everything upside down. Like, some of the stuff, like, not being able to see your cards, or, like, flip.
I hate that one.
Or not being able to see your Jokers and, like, shuffling them all around.
Or they randomly, like, block one.
Yeah.
Like, where it just doesn't work and you don't know one it's going to be.
Yeah, and it switches every time. And so if you built, like, you got, like, a bunch of Jokers that work really great together, then they take one away and you're like, oh, now none of it works.
Yep.
And now I am screwed.
It's just so infinitely replayable because of that shit. Yeah. Like, and, like, if you're into, like, poker or cards at all, it's just, like, I don't know how you don't get sucked into it. Like, if you're into, like, if you like poker and you start playing this game, you're going to get sucked. Like, you don't have to be a gamer or anything. It's going to suck you in. And I don't know, man. I just love it. I fucking love it. I cannot believe, like, this.
I think it works if you don't like poker, though. I don't think you have to know.
Yeah, I think that's been my big selling point to a lot of people. It's like, if you know poker, it's good, but it's also sometimes to your detriment because so much of the game.
It's like rewire your brain a little bit.
Yes. Because, like, if you can go and it's like, my play style is going to be high cards only, that's not what you go for in poker. If you're going to have a, like, there are Jokers where it's like, you get benefits for all you have in a hand with three cards.
Yeah.
You won't do a flush, you won't do a straight. You might do a pair, you might do a high card, you might do three of a kind. So it rewires your brain in this. I think when we talked about this, when I was talking about this originally, that it's like, you don't need to know poker hands. It will tell you what it is. Literally, if you pick the cards, it's like, you will figure it out at some point. But I love the fact that you go in, and the first hand or two, it's juicy, a flush or a straight, because that gives you the most amount of points off the back, and you have no modifiers or anything yet. Well, I mean, aside from your deck, it's a second hand onward where it's like, okay, now I need to figure out what this is going to become. What am I going to run with?
Yeah.
And maybe in the second hand you'll get a card that says, like, how many times have you played this hand?
Exactly.
And you're just like, well, then I'm leaning into this. You know what I mean? Like,
it's funny when you get to the end and you're like, I can play a pair because it's worth more than a royal flush now.
Yeah.
Like, you'll do the math on it. You're like, holy shit.
And oh, I just, didn't do the math. Dude. You just pick them up and see. Like,
you just know.
It's like, oh, this went down. And it's so weird because, like, there are times where it's like, oh, like, I have two pairs, but one pair nets me more because, like I said, you needed three cards. And for every, like, it was a pair of, like, fours or something like that. And, like, the fours repeat twice, so you get double that. Oh, I also have, like, a special card here. And let me add the spectral card, or let me do one of these things that had up. It's just, it's so simple in how gorgeous and creative it is. I think the thing is, and I think what Jeff was trying to get at, is just because you understand cards. Like, if you, even if you don't understand poker, we've all played with playing cards at some point in our lives. And as much as I love Vampire Survivor, as much as I love Slade Aspire, they have a certain video game magic that you need to understand. This is like, I can figure it out.
It's mainstream as fuck.
Yes. I can just play it. I could see this being like Solitaire for a new generation, where it's like a
game. It is.
The game you have on your computer, or your, you know, your the tablet or your phone or your Switch or whatever, and you play to kill time at work, you play to kill time on your commute, you play at lunch break, you play, you know, like, I'm preparing dinner, I need to watch the stove. I could just play. You need one hand. You don't need a lot of effort for this. And it is gorgeous. I think, you know, he does a great job, because it is one person. I mean, that's one, and they do a great job of like it's playing cards, but they do a great job of making it look unique with just like the, you know, like the cards and the motions on them. And then you add, like, you can get gold foil, you can get, you know, you can get stone cards, you can get, I forget what the multiplier is that has like the little blood stain coming down it. There's the seal on it. And it's just so, so, so fantastic.
It kind of joins a group of games that I call forever games. Like,
it is
Tetris or Lumines. Like, yeah. It's like one of those games that, like, you can sit down at any point in time, whether it be tomorrow or 10 years from now, and like, it's still going to hook you in.
Yeah.
And be awesome.
It's a game I'm going to own on every console that I have for the rest of my life.
Yeah, like every time they re-release it,
it's
like
gonna. I'm gonna own it. I need Blood Trail. Obviously, you need that game. And so, like, to me, that's just like, it makes it such a shoe-in for Game of the Year. Like, how many games get that status? Very few. Like, you know, I think Echoes of Wisdom was an excellent game this year. Excellent Zelda game, but it's, you know, I'll play it a few times in my life, but I'm going to play Blatcher for the rest of my life. Like, and so it's not a hard choice for me.
All right. Well, that's Blatcher high on all of our lists. Game of the Year for Jeff and Tony. My number one is Astrobot, which Jeff had at number two.
Yeah.
I love Astrobot. It's a wonderful, joyous, beautiful little game. I did everything in that. I don't normally like sit down and do everything in a game, and I did everything. Like,
and you weren't even going for achievements, you're going for trophies. So
yeah, you know, like, which that mean nothing to me. Like, I don't care about trophies, but I wanted to unlock everything. I wanted to you know, find all the secrets and get all the little collectibles and make my little Astrobot world as lively as possible. It's just so much fun. There are these challenge levels that I don't even know how they come about. Like, something shows up on like the space map, and if you chase it, knock it, it'll reveal one. And this happens for some other stuff that they're just like, they're also challenge levels, but they're not as challenging. These challenge levels are PlayStation symbols. So like each world has like a, you know, one of the face buttons, circle, square, X, or triangle. And there's like a series of four or five of these, and these are brutal, like just absolutely brutal 3D platforming, levels that are, yeah, that's so much fun. I had a blast just chasing them down. Like, just like, I'm going to finish it. There's no real need to do it. It's just like, these are really cool. And then they added some more levels that are all like time-based. And I went through them and played all them as well. Like, it's just absolutely phenomenal.
I mean, I can't say anything in disagreement. I agree with all of this. But it's a
lovely game.
So go Blatcher.
That's fine. That's fine.
But I mean, like, I get to, yeah, Astrobot's right there for me. Like, Astrobot's the reason I bought PlayStation 5. Like, I just didn't know it at the time.
It is the, I would say it's the best game on, it on is. That system.
Yeah.
I wish I wish it would have been so cheap right now. I so want to play this game.
It's so good, dude. You're gonna love it when you play it.
I think if you love Mario 3D Mario games, it's some of them, yes. There are ones that are also better than it, but it is up there. Like it does some really, really great stuff. It's super creative and it's just kind of like a joy to play. Like it's the world, like some of the levels, like the music is great and they're fun and enjoyable. And like, you're doing like weird things. You only do them once. And that was it. Like, that's all you need to do because like, it's super fun.
That's another thing that was like awesome about it is like Mario games are often iterative, like in terms like, or like they'll like introduce that idea of the game and you keep doing it over and over. And here it's like, every level is just like, we're going to do something good and awesome and we're going to throw it away, do something else new and awesome. Like,
there's like one. Go ahead, Earl.
I was going to say, I mean, that's definitely why you have the Galaxy games, because Galaxy is like, we're going to do something and you'll do it once and you'll never see it again.
This is most comparable to Galaxy, I think.
Yeah.
I was going to say, from what I've seen, it's Galaxy with Sunshine special stages.
Yeah. Those stages are very similar to the Sunshine stages.
I've seen a lot of this game. I just have not pulled the trigger.
You love it, man. Oh my god,
there's
so good.
There's one level. I don't know exactly where in the game it is, but it's later, and you go in and like the special gimmick is like you shrink down to like the size of a mouse, and you're then dealing with everything that's like way bigger than you in it. And like, it's just like really neat. And they do it once and that was it. And you never do it again. And it's like, it doesn't matter. Like, it was like, that was an awesome, awesome level. There's one in a casino where you're like freezing time and you're jumping on like coins as they're coming out to platform across things. Like, they do some really creative stuff in it. It's super fun. But Earl, what is your number one? I know what it is. I've already filled it in. But
yes, I see the form. But yes, it has to be officially announced. It is The Legend of Zelda Echoes of Wisdom. And I think, just, you know, for clarity's sake, like, this and Bayatro, like, 1 and 1.1. I went back and forth. But ultimately, I think Zelda just eked it out. And I just had an absolutely amazing time with this game. I think part of it is I enjoy Breath of the Wild. I enjoy Tears of the Kingdom. But I was arguing with Jeff for fun earlier. I do want my puzzles. I do want my dungeons. And to be fair, this game does break out of that because of the Echo system. But you do still get that proper setup. And I do love the Echo system. I think when they revealed it, I thought it was going to be very limited in what you do as a player. And in some regards, it can be. But it never... I think when I talked about this game, I mentioned that I kept on forgetting that I had a sword form, because I had so much fun just throwing out the echoes and seeing
how
they interacted with the enemies, and then forget, like, oh, right, I can also attack enemies directly if I wanted to. There's just something so great about, like, being in an underwater area and throwing out a shark and seeing it go to town on enemies, or throwing out the bomb fish and seeing it, like, wiggle its way to something and kind of get stuck in one of the pants and, like, they just know it's going to blow up. Later on, you get like the Dizzle Fill and you just throw them in, and they're very, very aggressive creatures. And I know the game can be very basic if you make it, because there are certain times you get certain echoes and it's like, I'm just going to run with this echo.
Yeah.
I like the variety, like trying out different ones and evolving it. So it wasn't always like, I was not always like, okay, anything is just like the water cubes up. It's like, there are different solutions. I enjoyed the spiders. They were always a good one. But the game gave you enough new tools that I always wanted to go back and try those new tools. Some of them worked, some of them didn't. it happens, but there was enough that there was always some variety. They were always offering you something new and different. I also like the setup. I like the story. Not, you know, not the necessary thing getting kidnapped, but the whole thing with Zelda. I mean, spoilers, like, she rescues her dad, I think. I mean, this is Zelda structure. You do 3 dungeons, big plot twist, you do 5 dungeons. She rescues her dad and everybody from the kingdom after the 3rd dungeon. And then it becomes this thing about, like, Hyrule still needs a hero, and, you know, we're going to put you out there even though we don't want you to. And it's great in that regard. Like, there are some iffy stuff with the story in regards to the fact that you can do the first 3 dungeons, I think, in any order, and then you can do the next 5. So there's not necessarily a heavy continuity between them. And there is, like, one segment in the Zora domain where you're just going back and forth between these 2 areas. But other than that, it was an absolute delight. I did not play Link's Awakening, so this style was also new to me. And I think it's a very fantastic style.
It's also a much better game, in my opinion.
Well, because it's actually, like, Link's Awakening was made for, like, the Game Boy. It was a handheld.
I know, but there's people, like, to me, that's always been, like, a lesser than, like, not as good as the others, but.
There are people that love it, but.
Yeah.
Yeah, but.
It's kind of like puts together everything, like, ancient and modern in the series into, like, one game in a really good way. I don't know. Like,
it's really cool.
Yes, and I would actually love it if they were, like, you know what, we're going to keep the 3D ones, like Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom in one zone. You can have Link do, like, you know, a classical Ocarina of Time, Skyward Sword, Fire Princess. And then having the 2D ones be this experimental thing with Zelda. You have a new type of ability. You have, you know, a function to do the story around that. And it's a good way to kind of diversify the franchise. Like, it's very much a traditional Zelda game. It's just a traditional main character in the lead role.
Well, there you have it. Those are our top 10s. Weirdly, there were only 10 games amongst the 40 that we, you know, they're less than 40, but, you know,
and overlapped 40 spots.
Yeah, there were only 10 out of them that overlapped.
Makes it easy. Oh, we're good.
So I've worked something out here. I kind of like looking where we placed them, assigning number values. We can move shit around. This isn't finalized, but let me know what you feel about this list right now. Black Ops 6 at 10, Path of Exile 2 at 9, Flock at 8, Helldivers 2 at 7, Prince of Persia The Lost Crown at 6, Dungeons of Hinterberg at 5, Indy at 4, Astrobot at 3, Zelda at 2, and Balatro nearly, it's not close. Like,
it's not, like, I think we joked about this all year, but I don't think at point since Balatro came out, there was ever any doubt it was going to be the game of the year.
I mean, like, I wouldn't have thought it after I was like, that's awesome that Earl found this game, but, like, you found it before it blew up.
Yeah, I did is, like, this was my game of the year until I beat Echoes of Wisdom.
Really? Yeah, like, I was just like, it's good. It just grew on me so much. Like, out of that list, the only thing I would say, I hate to shoot myself in the foot, is, like, I would save Path of Exile 2 for this year because I think it will be very high on my list this year, and I'm gonna argue strongly for it this year. So, like, if you guys want to save that fight for another year, I'd be happy to put something else in its slot.
And, while we figure that out, I would also, this is a weird one too, because it's my game of the year, but I'd actually put Astrobot above Zelda just because you and Jeff had it 1 and 2. I had it as my game of the year, but I think you and Jeff had it higher up on the list.
It was so hot, yeah. And it was my game of the year.
And I will say that I would have
Zelda probably would have been higher on my list if I had finished it. I just did not.
What the
I did
fuck?
Not get. I did not finish it. So not that I didn't want to, Jeff.
Just
I
just remove it from the list. Then it's tainted.
Just move it. Yeah, it's gone now.
It shouldn't be on there at all.
No Zelda. All right, I'll move Astrobot up one. I'm not opposed to that by any stretch.
I just it makes more sense. Like it was one and two for you folks. It was just on more people's list when Zelda was on more people's list. But it was higher up when you're in this.
So right, can we replace Jeff's game with a strategy game?
Can we do that? I'm fine with that. You want to put Age of Mythology there? At absolutely. Nine? I'm okay with that.
Or we can put it in 10.
Look at us.
And
look at us.
Move it at 10.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. And then Jeff can hold Path of Exile so that it can end up in between 3 and 7 next year.
Wow.
Just joking.
It would be so funny if Jeff forgets about it next year. Like, I had so many.
No, I'd be surprised if that happened.
It's going to be at the top of all our social media feeds because Elon Musk is going to keep pushing it up there. We won't be able to avoid it.
All right. Well, then I feel that we have a top 10 here, unless you guys want to adjust it any. Age of Mythology retold at 10, Call of Duty Black Ops 6 at 9, Flock at 8, Helldivers 2 at 7, Prince of Persia of the Lost Crown at 6, Dungeons of Hinterberg at 5, Indiana Jones and the Great Circle at 4, The Legend of Zelda Echoes of Wisdom at 3, Astrobot at 2, and Balatro at number 1. Any arguments there? Yeah. We good.
I like this list. I'm off.
I think it's a good list. I demand a fight next year because we haven't fought over this list in so long.
This is like the unprecedented to the fact that like Balatro was just like the runaway. Like I normally think it's a little bit closer.
But no,
like we all had it up at the top.
It's just it came so early, established itself so strong. It's kind of like this, like, underdog story, too, in a way. Like, it really kind of, like, made me sad that it didn't win the Game Awards one.
I was kind of sad about that, too.
Yeah.
It's one person, or, I mean, they market it as one person, and it's insane.
Basically. It's like him, someone did the music. I don't think he did the music, but whatever, dude. Like, regardless, even if it was, like, 5 people, that's incredible what they did, like... A lot of thought like went into that game, like really, and it's a game that you keep playing. It's like that's what you want. Like at least that's what I want at this stage of my life. Is games like that you can play forever.
I mean, at times I want that for sure. Yeah,
I value that way more over like I don't know, Indiana Jones. I'd rather have Balatro.
You play that game forever. Remember how long you spent in the Vatican?
Yeah, it's true.
All right. Well, those are that's our top 10. And our game of the year is Balatro. We'll be back next week. I don't know if any games are quite out yet. Dynasty Warriors Origins came out, but
yeah, we'll have a few things to talk about that we didn't cover, like Until Dawn Troy came out today, and talk about that next week. I mean, I don't think anybody's gonna get Donkey Kong Country Returns. That's out today. There's some Sony news we can tackle next week, and I think Microsoft has their showcase next.
Yeah,
it's true. Yeah, the 23rd, so
the Thursday. So we'll have that to talk about.
They can announce all their games are coming to the Switch. Yeehaw.
Switch 2.
Switch 2, yes.
Can't wait to play Halo on my Switch 2.
Hell yeah, brother.
I'm curious to see what they do because Halo Master Chief Collection is a massive game, and the Switch has like 30 gigs of memory.
Yeah. Are you going to fit that on a cart? Is it a download? Like, what are we doing? I'm super interested to see how that works out.
Halo branded SD cards. The new thing.
Be awesome. We'll be back next week. In the meantime, go play Balatro. It's awesome. So.
Bom, 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 bom.
Say goodnight.
I can't do the fucking music. Good night.